Yo, what's up, guys? Today is Saturday, the 8th of November. It's JB here, and I'm sitting here with the one, the only, the Jason England.
Hi, how are you?
Pretty good, glorious. And we are going to do a roundtable discussion tonight. You guys have been submitting questions throughout the evening, starting around 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time, and the time now is around 10:30 or so Eastern Time, and we're going to start to go through some of these questions as we speak. Last night, Friday night, we released the first of a few of many one-on-ones from Jason England. It was on the strike second deal, which was cool. If you guys have seen it, a lot of these questions tonight have to do with not just that item, but also other gambling and card technique issues. We're going to get into some of these questions you guys have been submitting. But first off, I'll have Jason just give you his life story in a nutshell. How did you get into card technique, being a card mechanic per se? What's your history in card magic?
Well, I've been doing card magic and gambling sleight of hand for right at 20 years now. Started when I was a kid, probably 17 or 18 years old. I'm almost 38 now. And I'm not really sure what made me gravitate towards card magic initially, and then the gambling stuff came a year or so later on. But my guess is that I saw very early on three really good card magicians, two of them from Memphis, Tennessee, and one of them from my hometown of Knoxville, Tennessee. And those three guys really got me started down the road of doing heavy-duty, high-quality card magic, and then the gambling stuff came very shortly thereafter.
Interesting. So let's get to some of these questions now. Starting from some of the questions, you've got an overview now of Jason's life story. We're going to get into the questions. The first one that I'm going to take tonight comes from a member named Stoneface. It's post number 7. He's asking specifically about the strike second deal, the one-on-one that was released on Friday. He says, how long did it take you to perfect the strike second deal, if you consider perfecting it possible? Is this your favorite second deal?
First and foremost, we'll answer the second question first because it's the easier question. It is not my favorite second deal, and that's because I don't have a favorite second deal. I like to use the tool that's appropriate at the time. I think the strike second deal has myriad applications. You can use it in dozens and dozens and dozens of different ways. But there are other times when a push-off second deal is more appropriate, more effective, or should be chosen for whatever reason. So I don't have a favorite, but I do like to use both depending on the situation. The first part of that question was, how long did it take me to perfect the strike second deal? Well, there's really two questions there. First of all, the question is, do I think it's perfect? No, I don't. I still work on the strike second and all the other types of seconds and false deals every single day. So I don't think it's perfect. But the other way you could interpret that question is, how long do I think it takes you to have a proficient strike second deal? And the answer to that question is, I think it depends on how much you practice, obviously. But I believe that with consistent practice, you could have a performable, proficient strike second deal in 6 months to a year. If you're a diehard and you practice every single day and you're very conscientious about it, for some other people, it may take 2 years. There may be a couple of you hardcore guys out there that could get it in 4 or 5 months. That's to get proficient. To be an expert could take years for almost anyone. I don't care how much natural talent you have or how much you practice. There are still some intangible elements of the deal that are going to take you many, many months and even years to do.
I think that was, you mentioned in the strike second one-on-one, you talk about what you just said, if it taking X many months to get it proficient. When we created that one-on-one, we shot it in a way that we were trying to give people that are beginners out there just learning for the first time the core elements of it, the steps involved in the second deal, and then also something that the more intangible things about it, how you have to do it by feel, it has to be smooth and natural, and that's the kind of thing that takes much longer to develop.
Sure. I didn't tip everything I know about the second deal in that 20-minute one-on-one, not because I didn't want to, but because clearly we don't have time in a one-on-one like that. But what I wanted to do was I wanted to show people that have no experience at a second deal that, A, it can be done. You can break the move down into its component parts, demonstrate it, put you on the path to learning a proper second deal, and over time you will make some minor adjustments and things of that nature on your own. And you can always come back to me or another expert second dealer and ask them for what I like to call course corrections. So my job, as I see it, is to put you on the path, and then in the weeks and months and years to come, you have to make the necessary course corrections to keep working towards
perfecting
a great second deal. Exactly.
Right. This next question is by AZN of Spades. He's asking another second deal question. He's saying, how do you use the second deal? Do you use this in magic? Do you use this in a gambling demonstration? What is your typical application for it?
A typical application for me now is in gambling demonstrations. However, I know of a good half a dozen wonderful card tricks that the strike second deal can be used in. Alex Elmsley had one called Diamond Cut Diamond that was very popular. Martin Nash has a routine called Colors on the March, which is very interesting. Darwin Ortiz has a phenomenal trick that has a gambling flavor, but it's still I would consider it a magic trick. In his first book, At the Card Table, called Jacks Are Better, that I've done for 15 years, and I'll do it for the rest of my life. It's really great. So I use it in both worlds, both the magic world and the gambling demonstration world.
You talk a little bit about this in the one-on-one, but I'll expand this question. The guy's asking, it's DejaVu05, and he's asking, who has influenced you the most in the strike second deal? But I'll expand that a little bit. We'll breathe more life into it. Who's influenced you the most just in card technique in general?
Card technique in general, I would point to probably four or five people that I met personally. Those people are Steve Forte, Richard Turner, Darwin Ortiz, Gary Plants, a gentleman from Texas, and Martin Nash. Those five men that I actually met personally have been the biggest influences on me over the years. However, although I never met Di Vernon or Ed Marlowe, their writings were huge influences on me and continue to be huge influences on me. Vernon more so than Marlowe, although I did get a lot of good information from both people. And then just the classic books. You know, I'm a student of Erdnes and, a dozen other classic books where I've learned a lot through the years.
For people learning card technique, this is another question from Stoneface. So you got two questions answered tonight. Double bonus. This is a good question, though, and I don't think we covered this specifically in the video, but it comes up all the time, not just with gambling moves, but just in card magic in general. And he says, do you believe that the size of your hand matters when it comes down to doing any particular sleights?
Do I believe the size of your hand matters? Well, I don't really know what he means by matters, but I'll take a guess. Does having large hands help you do certain sleights? Of course it does. It's helpful. But is it necessary to do certain sleights? And in that case, I don't think so. I've seen some people, Steve Freeman, who is an unbelievable card man from California and a student of Di Vernon, does not have particularly large hands. And Steve Freeman can do anything. You hand him a deck of cards, name any move, he can do it. So do you have to have big hands to do certain moves? No, you do not. Is it helpful to have large hands if you're doing palming moves or if you're doing shifts, passes, things of that nature? Yeah, I think it's helpful, but I don't believe that it's critical.
A question of a different type. This is coming from Hijacked Magic on page 2 of this thread, saying, while you were growing up and doing magic and card sleights, was there anything or anyone that wanted to make you just stop and quit? I guess the question's asking, what inspires you to keep working towards perfection of a sleight that you're working on? What gives you the drive to keep finessing something until it's really polished?
I can't think of anything that ever made me seriously want to stop and quit. One of the things that disgusts me, has disgusted me for 20 years and continues to disgust me, is just magic done poorly of any type. It bothers me. I don't like to see it. I'm not interested in watching it. I really don't care for it. But it never made me want to stop doing magic. It just made me want to do it even better. So I hope that answers the question.
Yes, I think so. Let's see here. There's a lot of questions I'm reading. This is the second question I've read that's regarding shade. Someone's asking, this is Eugene So. I was asking, what parts did you play? How did you find your way into the particular movie and your involvement in it?
The part that I play in the movie is I'm playing myself at the very end of the film practically, and it's just for a couple of seconds. That was a gift from the director, who's a good friend of mine. He said, you can be in the scene, you can have a line, et cetera, et cetera. How I got into the movie itself, or what I did in the movie, was I did about 50 to 60% of the opening title sequence moves. So the false shuffles and deals and the mucks and the things of that nature that you see run in the opening and closing credits. Those are my hands Paul Wilson's hands, Earl Nelson's hands, and Damian Neiman, the writer and the director of the movie. Those are his hands. And we just all hung out together and knew each other when Damian got the film off the ground, and that's how I got into it.
King of Spades 07 asks, who is your hero in magic? This could be not just magic, but card technique in general. Which performer or performers inspires your love of the art?
I'll tell you what, it's a great question. I've got a lot of heroes in magic. To name some people that are living now, I would say that I look up to Ricky Jay. I look up to Michael Weber. I look up to Juan Tamariz. There's probably half a dozen other guys that I could name. As far as people that are no longer with us, I've already talked about Di Vernon. He was an enormous influence on me early on. And then there's the classics, the guys that everyone, I think, should be influenced by. People like Fred Capps, people like Del Rey. I mean, these guys were performers their whole lives, and they have so much to teach us, it's not even funny. So those are the big names for me.
Back to your beginnings and your influential works. Ben Long asks, how important to you is Expert at the Card Table? How do you view it in your work?
I tell people about the Expert at the Card Table. It's a question I get a lot. The Expert at the Card Table is not the end of the discussion of card table artifice, card table magic. However, I think it's the beginning of the discussions. I liken it to a book like Isaac Newton's Principia. Science has advanced since Newton was writing books, 500 years ago. But his book set the template for the modern science book. And what Erdnase did was he set the template for the modern card magic book with the number of illustrations, the quality of the writing, the depth of the thinking. We have improved in small areas on some of the things Erdnase wrote about, but in the big picture sense, the things Erdnase wrote about 106 years ago are absolutely still true to this day, and that's why the book is critical for us to study.
Question next from Fridolina. Fridolina?
Fridolina, looks like.
Fridolina with three eyes. If you're going to give advice to someone that's just starting out in card magic, card technique, which sleights would you tell them to learn and spend the most time working on perfecting them? So I think a lot of people that might have seen the strike second deal go up in the one-on-one section, they may not be that adept yet. Where should they spend their time? What should they focus on? What are the core things they need to be working on?
I will answer this question by telling you that you should absolutely learn the basics. You should learn things like double lifts. You should learn things like the top change. You should learn shuffle work, both overhand shuffle work and riffle shuffle work. You should learn things like the side steal and controls of that nature. But another element of that question is, where do you go to learn these things? And JB, as you know, I'm a big fan of books. And I would tell people that they should go out and buy books like The Expert at the Card Table, like Expert Card Technique, like Royal Road to Card Magic, things like the John Scarney book, Scarney on Card Tricks, Card Control by Arthur Buckley. You've also got the Encyclopedia of Card Tricks by Hugh Garden Browey. And in these books, everything you need to have an unbelievably well-rounded foundation in card magic, it's in there. Sometimes it's not easy to get through. I admit that The Expert at the Card Table is not an easy book to read, but the information is there, and as long as you keep at it and persevere, you will be able to extract it. It's as simple as that.
I think this next question is pretty interesting. This is something that's a unique topic. It's by Ineski. And he's asking, how does doing gambling demonstrations take away from the magic because people can understand that it's all just sleight of hand? How should these cheating techniques be presented to the audience? Do you do both at the same night, or do you keep them separate so you are either a card mechanic or a magician?
Okay, I think it's a great question. It's a question that's going to take a few minutes to answer. First of all, do I think that doing gambling demonstrations take away from the magic? I'm sure is what he meant to write there, but that's okay. Take away from the magic because people can understand that it's all sleight of hand. And the answer is an emphatic no. Don't make the mistake of confusing intellectual knowledge with emotional impact. Let me explain what that means. When we go see a movie, when we go see Superman or Batman or Jurassic Park or some movie like that, intellectually, we completely understand that what we're looking at is not real, that it never happened, and that it's all either special effects or acting or something like that. That doesn't stop us from reacting emotionally to what we're seeing. If anyone can watch Old Yeller without crying at the end of the movie when the dog is shot, you're a better man than me because I can't do it. But you know what? Intellectually, I know the dog wasn't shot. That's a movie. What I'm after is that emotional impact. And if someone understands intellectually that I'm a sleight of hand expert, that's fine with me because those two elements of their brain shouldn't get involved at the same time. So it doesn't take away from the magic, even though intellectually they know that it's more than likely sleight of hand.
Oh, two things. Firstly, Old Yeller was a documentary, I believe. And yeah. I hate to be the first to break this to you, but...
Something like that.
He's gone with Lassie. But yeah, I think that it's a good point. It's about the essence of magic is kind of elevating people out of this world of technicalities and moves and sleights and kind of giving them an experience, some entertainment, giving them something to wonder about or how did he do that. And if it's done properly, they're not thinking about necessarily how many, you know, what sleights you're doing, how quickly you're doing
sure.
it. It's an elevated...
To follow on with that, I have to say that although I do a lot of sleight of hand in my act, I have things in my act that don't involve sleight of hand. There are some self-working card tricks out there that'll fool anybody alive. And occasionally, just throwing one of those into a routine is enough to plant that seed of doubt in the minds of the spectators. They don't understand the mathematical nature of the trick, and they know you didn't use sleight of hand, so they have nothing to grab a hold of. And that's the essence of great magic, is that they don't have anything to think about.
As a perfect example of that, what you exactly just said, one of the guys that was on set while we were filming the Strike Second deal was watching Jason, obviously, do the Strike Second deal over and over and over again, knew it was a second deal. And so Jason, to fry him, did a double lift in the middle of the whole thing. And it was like, I'm watching it. I did not see anything.
Sure. I mean, he bought it. And the reason he bought it is because he doesn't have the knowledge of difficult sleight of hand to be able to piece together the method. So I switched methods on him, even though I told him it was the same thing. I did a double lift and did the best second deal he'd ever seen in his life. And he believed me because he didn't have that knowledge to put together and figure out that I was conning him a little bit.
Let's see here. I'm looking for next questions here. This guy is asking, ever go to Vegas? We're in Vegas right now.
I live here.
Next guy, the cleaner, it says Danny Garcia has told me some funny stories about you.
I don't know how he knows those stories because I've never actually met Danny Garcia, but I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, so if I think Danny's coming back here soon. I'm not sure when, though.
Oh, that'd be good. I'd like to meet him.
Let's see here. A lot of questions about the Gambling Protection Series.
It's coming. That's all I can say. I'm working on it. It's coming. I see Steve once a week, and he yells at me every time I see him for not getting it out sooner.
This is kind of a question I can answer, too. It's by Magic Shadow 9. He says, are we going to see more of you at Theory 11? And we can answer this by saying we always post that we read the forums. We read these suggestions you guys have of what one-on-ones you're looking for, not just one-on-ones, but everything we read feedback of. So these are the kind of things we're looking at when we're trying to determine what to have next. There'll be a lot more from Jason on the site, but in terms of what we're going to do next and in what order, we really do look at your feedback and read the forums and constantly are using that as our kind of compass of what to do next, what you guys are looking for.
Sure.
Let's see here. We will read, by Creeper. He's asking, do you do any flourishes? And add on to that, what is your bearing on cardistry, this kind of new art form of flourishing and cardistry, not necessarily use in magic, but as a performance art?
Do I do any flourishes? Well, I don't do the kind of flourishes that Dan and Dave Buck have made popular and that Chris Kinner has made popular and people like that. I don't do those things, but I love to watch them. It's something that fascinates me. I understand most of what's going on when I see them, but it's just an area of the art that I have not gotten into. If there was a pill that I could take and wake up tomorrow morning and be able to do all of that stuff, I would absolutely take the pill and I would be happy and I would use them and incorporate them in my act. However, I do flourishes that are a little more pedestrian, a little more common, things that have been around, for 100 years. I believe that from a layman's point of view, a ribbon spread and then a domino-style turnover is a flourish to them.
Correct.
You know, I believe that springing the cards from hand to hand is a flourish from a layman's point of view. They usually don't see people that can do those things. Occasionally, I'll use something like that in my act. Occasionally, I have things that are flourishy, but are not the kind of Dan and Dave Buck style modern flourishes. But I wish I could do some of it. I just, to be honest, I have not put in the time.
This is a really cool question. This is the most outside the box question I've seen yet tonight. It's by Creeper. It's, again, he's asking, if you could meet the real Erdenes, what would you talk about? What would you ask him?
You know, I've wondered about this question over the years, and the truth is, I could answer the question now and tell you what I would say and what I would talk about and the things I would ask him. But I would guess that if I really had the chance to meet the guy, I wouldn't know where to begin. And it would depend on the setting. It would depend on the situation. I might ask him who he really was. I might not. You know, there's a part of me that doesn't want to know. I think the fact that Erdenes wrote that book 106 years ago, and then completely vanished as far as we know, I think that's one of the greatest mysteries in magic. And if you told me that you knew who he was, there's a part of me that wants to know. There's a part of me that likes the history and would like to look into it and find out who he was and what he did. Was he really a gambler? Was he just a magician? You know, I have my own thoughts on all of those things. But there's another part of me that doesn't want to know who the guy is. I think it's one of the last great lingering mysteries in all of magicdom. You know, so I don't know what I would say, to be perfectly honest with you.
Who are you, essentially? Question from Brian L., and I'll touch on this one too. The question is it's a few paragraphs here, but he's essentially saying about magic instruction, learning new techniques and effects. Is it better through books? Is it better through videos? Is one way superior to the other? The way I would answer this, coming from the perspective of someone that runs Theory 11, so I might be biased, but I don't think my answer is, I think there's a place for both. I think we're never going to have Erdenes doing a one-on-one. I think he's unavailable for the next century. So we'll never be able to give that. We'll never be able to give that experience of learning from a master like that that's no longer around. So there's obviously a very important, essential element of instruction, if you really want to truly get into this, of engaging with books like that and the bazillion other books that are out there. On another level, there's things that, you know, you can use modern technology to its advantage and see someone like Jason teaching and pouring his heart into 20 minutes of really jam-packed instruction on details of the something like the second deal that you cannot see. You can't see those finger positions and the fluidity and the eccentricities of it that are really, really important. So I think there's a way, in my opinion, that they both have their fit. If you are someone that's a true student of the art, there's advantages to both. So if someone really is learning, you should capitalize on both mediums.
Absolutely. I believe that what you said is absolutely correct, that there are pros and cons to both mediums. The pro to books is that so much information can be compacted into such a small volume. I mean, in one book like The Expert at the Card Table, 205 pages, there's a lifetime's worth of information. It would be difficult, I think, to put a lifetime's worth of information into a single DVD. On the other hand, there are things where books don't shine. For instance, we're not exactly sure what the open shift in Erdenes looked like. It would sure be nice to have videotape of his hands doing the open shift or doing the SWE shift. So in that case, I think video really shines because it allows you to see what something should look like. The downside of video is the aforementioned lack of space in most cases. You just can't put a lifetime's worth of information on a single DVD. But the other downside of video is that people can very easily fall into the trap of, instead of learning rhythm from the DVD, they learn my rhythm. Instead of learning staging, they learn my staging. Instead of learning routining, they learn my routining. There are stories told of the students of Slidini that spent a lot of time with Slidini personally, actually taking on his accent. So when they would go to perform, they would go up to their audiences and say, "You are going to take a card. and I'm going to fool you. And you know why? Because are you no going to see what I do? Well, clearly that wouldn't happen if you'd learned Slidini from the book. But it's an easy trap to fall into to start mimicking the performer on the DVD instead of taking the raw information and making it your own. So that's one of the downsides of DVD or video of any type. But if you're conscientious and you make sure to not do those things, then I think video DVD is a perfectly acceptable way to learn things.
We'll cap this off. We have to roll tonight because we need to upload this, this podcast. But I'll top this off with a question we kind of touched on earlier. But especially it's relevant in the wake of a lot more one-on-ones and knuckle-busting things to come. What is your best advice in terms of motivation for people to keep going and never quit when they're learning something hard?
My motivation is that I love this stuff. I can't imagine not doing it. And just because something is difficult to me and I can't apply it tomorrow doesn't mean that I won't eventually get there. So, you know, I don't know what it is about my personality that allows me to continue to strive towards more difficult sleight of hand and to continue pressing ahead and trying things. It certainly helps to see progress, but, you know, I don't know exactly what it is that keeps me going. It may just be something about my personality. You know, I don't know.
What was I going to say? So just in general, last thoughts, I was going to say, for you guys listening out there, obviously check out the Strike Second Deal. I think it's one of the most detailed instruction videos we've released yet in the one-on-one section. Really does hammer down every detail that we could possibly fit in there. Jason, I got him set up on the forums yesterday, so we can try to jump on the forums and answer some more of the questions you guys have posted over the past day or two, and also look forward to a lot more one-on-ones to come. And keep the suggestions coming, because that's what we do look at in trying to figure out which ones to go with next. I think that is it for tonight. So today is Saturday, the 8th of November, and this has been the Saturday Night Roundtable Discussion. I'll chat with you guys next week.